And it's just about 10 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. Look at the new WBAI.org webpage, just launched on Friday. Very innovative and interactive. You'll like it. And you'll like In Other News with Jeff Brady, coming up right now on WBAI New York.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with investigative journalist and author Nick Bryant about his book, The Franklin Scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. The conference and fundraiser called Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails will be held in Los Angeles on August 17th. We talk now with the organizer, John White.
Thank you very much for having me.
Give us an update on what's going on here.
Yeah, sure thing. The Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails conference and fundraiser. And if everybody wants to check it out, the website is cbclive2012.com. What we're calling this is the largest stand ever against chemtrails and geoengineering. We really found that it was time to organize and assemble and also really show some unity, but also to work on action steps together, because there's so many good camps creating awareness for geoengineering, but we really didn't have a home base, and we didn't have, you know, a pinnacle moment where we could all stand together, and hopefully that spreads to more moments. And the event itself is at a place called the Wilshire Ebell Theater. It's a giant old show house, beautiful old show house in Hollywood, and it's 1,250 seats. It's a really big venue. It's got balconies, gorgeous place. So we really wanted to go really big for this first one and, you know, make a big splash and to show how serious we are in this awareness and this movement. And we're going to be featuring 17 experts in geoengineering agendas and really a wide, wide range of people that will be presenting information and also talking about action steps and solutions. I mean, we're going to be covering the effects on humans, but also the effects on plants, the effects on ocean, the effects on trees. We're really covering the effects on our entire world and environment. Probably most exciting part about the whole thing, I would say, is for everybody who's seen What in the World Are They Spraying, Michael Murphy's documentary that opened up more eyes than any piece of film for the movement. I think they have over 11 million views now, but we're going to be featuring his follow-up premiere, which is Why in the World Are They Spraying. That will be premiering on the Saturday night at the event.
Sounds like it's going to be a real good one. And he's looking at the aerosol operations and connecting it to specifically weather modification, weather control.
That's right. Yes, he's featuring on that. He is also going to touch on some of the other end causes and also some of the – he's going to extend a little bit further out into the agendas, but a lot of that is focused around the weather modification element, yes.
This fundraiser is also going to be – the proceeds are going to go for Morgellons research.
Yeah, that's correct. The entire event is a nonprofit. And for people who really research this deeply, the geoengineering and the aerosol programs, there's a lot of connections to Morgellons. The connections always arise. And there's several groups who are kind of cross-pollinated. A lot of people know Clifford Carnicom. And his organization is a 501c nonprofit called the Carnicom Institute. And, you know, he's one of the first people to really expose not just the aerosol agenda, but its connection to Morgellons. He started that in approximately 97. And then another group we're working with is called the Morgellons Research Group. And they do some very fine research on the actual fiber contents themselves. So what we're trying to do, and this is the ultimate goal for this whole thing in raising money for these two groups, is to give them independence from the government laboratories that they have to depend on right now to get their materials checked by labs. So they don't have the proper equipment right now to analyze the samples. So everything goes out to government laboratories. So they're hit or miss on their lab results. Every time they have to send it out, it costs $400. It's very unreliable. So the money we're going to raise is hopefully going to be able to buy a machine for each group so they don't have to send out their samples anymore. And according to what they've told me, that alone could cause significant movement in their findings. And having the two groups both having the same machinery means they can verify each other's findings.
That's a noble cause, and I'm really glad to hear that you're doing that. The event is called Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails, coming up August 17th through the 19th in Los Angeles. We're going to be talking more about it in the coming weeks. We're getting an update from John White. He's an organizer. John, how did you begin to get concerned about this?
Well, it's an interesting story. And I think it's this way for a lot of people, how we end up kind of backing into this information. And since 1999, I've been in Southeast Asia in textile manufacturing. And in the early 2000s, one thing that we saw on these lines with these textile groups is that there was a tremendous amount of heavy metals used in the manufacturing process. So what would happen is the people who worked in the manufacturing lines, they would actually start to suffer from heavy metal toxicity, ranging from things such as vertigo to dizziness, sleeplessness, and just an overall disposition of confusion, really. And that's what heavy metals can do, because, they do work on the brain level. So what happened was, seeing all that, as a company in Asia, we decided that we needed to create a solvent-free package. So we did that in Asia, and we found a manufacturing process that was heavy metal-free. So fast forward about 6 years, and I'm back in the U.S., and I'm living in Southern California, and I'm in an area that has no manufacturing around me whatsoever, not for, at least 100 miles where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in myself a lot of these same symptoms that I saw in the manufacturing lines in China.
Oh.
It was fascinating. I mean, I was like, well, okay, I have, literal vertigo, sleeplessness, dizziness. I just, all these spells of agitation. Where is this coming from? So I started to research, and what I did is I tested myself. I tested my own body, and I found that my levels of aluminum were extremely high. That alone set me off on a search to where is aluminum coming from. I have no manufacturing here. I don't live in Asia anymore. Where could it be coming from? So that brought me to the research of the geoengineering agendas, and it brought me to Michael Murphy's film. And from there, I started my own research, and I created a group with another gentleman in Florida called Chemtrails Project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's chemtrailsproject.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we test rain nationally. And we test it for aluminum, barium, strontium. We check the pH levels. We've also added manganese and some other elements. And we also have now expanded to the UK and Australia and New Zealand. So we're trying to get a global snapshot of what's in the rainwater. And, of course, just like has been reported for the last few years, we have the very kind of typical levels of aluminum, barium, and strontium. The one interesting thing that was maybe independent in our findings so far from others is that certain areas recently have very high levels of strontium, and in some cases, no aluminum. What that means is it entirely rules out soil contamination. A lot of people look at rain results that have aluminum in it and say, okay, it's soil contamination because aluminum is the most abundant metal in soil.
I got you.
Let's say, it's dust or some other cause.
Mm-hmm.
But when you find these really jacked up levels of strontium and barium with no aluminum, you have completely ruled out soil contamination. So you can now say to yourself, it's either coal burning or it's from an aerosol program.
The patents of these aerosol operation, they're matching.
Yeah, they are. And I think they're expanding. And I think they're expanding for a lot of reasons. Strontium is a much more expensive metal, but it's also a much higher conductive metal than even aluminum. So, it has some quote-unquote benefits for whoever considers them benefits, that is. And the other thing that, we're really looking into in this, I don't want to state too much what this could mean. I just want to state that we're finding high levels of manganese. Manganese has a lot of different end uses tied to it. So we are now at the beginning of that testing.
I've heard that. John White, the organizer for Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails Conference, that's going to be held in Los Angeles, August 17th through the 19th. It's also going to be on the web, I believe.
That's correct.
Can you give us that website one more time?
This agenda is obviously not just in California, so we wanted to offer this to the entire world. So the whole thing will be available via live stream. If you go to the website, which is cbclive2012.com, you can see on there very clearly, where you can get tickets to come in person, but also how you can purchase tickets to watch it anywhere in the world live. And it's only $13 a day, to watch it anywhere in the world live. You can also see the schedule. You can see the bios for all of the presenters. There's our promo video is up there on the homepage, so it has everything you need right there on the website.
John White, thank you very much for giving us this update.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. One of the most painful topics to address and acknowledge and let alone investigate, and that's child sex abuse and child sex trafficking. This is in the gutter of human nature, and as child exploitation networks are exposed in the United States and other countries, there's a lot to learn amid the scrambling to cover it up and conceal the people behind those organizations and pedophile rings. And there's a lot to learn about the funding structures as well of these organizations and definitely the anatomy of a cover-up. We welcome back investigative journalist Nick Bryant. He's the author of the book The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal. Nick Bryant's book begins with the Nebraska's failed Franklin Federal Credit Union. And then, as a reader, you're led through this investigation to Washington, D.C., where businessmen, senators, and the CIA are implicated. The hard lessons are learned by the investigators and witnesses who came forward as they stumbled upon something that started in a small Midwest community and connected to the top levels in Washington, D.C. We're joined in the studio with Nick Bryant. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be back on the show, Jeff.
Well, it's really good to have you here. You've done something incredibly important and critical for many people in this country to understand. Can you give us a brief outline of the sequence of events in this investigation?
Well, the Franklin scandal is about an interstate pedophile network that flew kids from coast to coast and pandered them to the rich and the powerful. And a lot of the kids were taken out of orphanages. Some of the kids were taken out of foster care, and some of the kids were runaways that had fallen through the cracks. And ultimately, these children were pandered to some of the richest and most powerful people in the United States of America. And the network was eventually covered up by at least two grand juries and possibly a third grand jury in Washington, D.C., with the help of course, the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the Secret Service.
Among the key players you mentioned is Larry King, and he is a Republican big shot who was involved in running the pedophile network, but he also was involved with embezzling $40 million out of the Franklin Credit Union. Can you tell listeners about that?
The Franklin Credit Union was a lower socioeconomic credit union in Omaha, Nebraska, North Omaha, which is Omaha's economically depressed segment. And it was designed to give loans to lower socioeconomic people in North Omaha. And suddenly, $40 million was missing from the credit union.
It's a lot of money.
Well, a credit union that was only supposed to have $2.5 million in it. And so there were $40 million missing. And the Nebraska Senate decided to investigate the $40 million looting of the credit union. And ultimately what happened was when the Senate subcommittee formed, social services came to them, people in social services. And social services had known about this pedophile network for a number of years because kids had come forward and said that they'd been flown here or and they talked about pedophilic parties amongst the rich and the powerful. And these were lower socioeconomic kids. So And they provided a lot of detail concerning where they were flown and who was at these parties. So social services was bringing these allegations to both state and federal authorities, and they were just simply ignored. So when the Senate subcommittee formed, social services talked to the senators and said, the $40 million, that's only part of the problem. That credit union is a front for an interstate pedophile network that is flying children from coast to coast. So then the senators started to look into those allegations too.
You have to hand it to social services people that came forward. I wondered, so then they began the investigation into the pedophile network, but did they use social services investigative work and papers?
Yes. Social services provided the senators with a lot of paperwork, paperwork that would ultimately be sealed by two grand juries and paperwork that I ultimately ended up with. And the kids that come forward provide a tremendous amount of detail about their abuse. And social services was very concerned and knew exactly what was going on. And these this documentation was eventually given to the senators.
Before we get into Gary Caladori, I do want to mention to listeners that the information in this book does have sealed grand jury testimony in it, and you had mentioned that you weren't supposed to do this and you could be arrested.
Well, anytime that you publish sealed grand jury testimony, that's illegal. But I decided that because the cover-up of an interstate pedophile network is so evil that I felt morally obligated to use sealed grand jury testimony to show how corrupt these grand juries were. And the government does not want my book publicized at all, so they will not arrest me for using sealed grand jury testimony. If a lot of times journalists end up in the slammer because of sealed grand jury testimony or refusing to give up their sources about grand juries, I would never give up my sources. So I would eat 18 months for contempt for sure. But the government does not want to publicize Nick Bryant. The government does not want to publicize the Franklin scandal. So therefore, we're having a nice conversation right now.
Well, you know, I hope you stay out of jail. I'll just say that. The information here is so deep and important to understand. And again, before we get into the investigative work, there are other Franklin scandal-type networks out there that you were just telling me about one in Europe, and you were down in Florida, and you were investigating another one. Could you just give listeners a sample of what you learned there?
Well, in the Franklin scandal, I talk about an interstate pedophile network that was covered up by a state grand jury and then a federal grand jury. And there was a pedophile network in Miami or Palm Beach in southern Florida that was also covered up by a state grand jury. And then there was so much local outrage that the feds came in and said, okay, we're going to exact justice. And then the feds did absolutely nothing. They supposedly convened a grand jury, but there was no grand jury decision. And the person who was flying these young girls around, these pubescent girls around, he's since settled over 30 molestation lawsuits, but he had to do 13 months in the county jail.
And his name is?
Jeffrey Epstein.
Okay. And the one in Europe, there was such public outrage that people filled the streets.
The Dutroux scandal in Belgium was very much like Franklin, where the rich and the powerful were being provided with children. And there was the cover-up was pretty massive, much like the cover-up in the Franklin scandal. And tens of thousands of Belgians hit the streets. And there was complete outrage in Belgium. And there's also been one in Portugal. There's been one in Venezuela. There's been one in Mexico. And these are the ones that I have pretty good documentation on.
Getting back to your book, The Franklin Scandal, Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal. It's published by Trying Day. Can you talk about the subcommittee selecting an investigator to look into these allegations of a pedophile network and the embezzling of the money?
Well, the subcommittee, when it formed the Senate, this Nebraska Senate subcommittee, they realized that they were going up against a monolith of power because state and federal authorities hadn't responded to child abuse. And they were also hearing the names of very prominent politicians and that kids were being flown around. So these senators were very cognizant of what they were going up against. And one of the senators later told me that he felt like he went bear hunting with a BB gun. I mean, that's how outmatched they were. But anyway, they initially hired counsel and an investigator. And there was some dissension amongst the committee. There was a tremendous amount of heat put on the committee. Both the local media and the mainstream media really excoriated the committee. And ultimately, the first counsel and the first investigator eventually walked away from the investigation. And that's when the committee hired a really great investigator named Gary Caradore.
Gary Caradore went in and began to collect witness testimony and testimony from victims. And then he was tracked and followed by the FBI. And tell listeners a little bit about that story.
Gary Caradore was an amazing investigator. And there are, when you read my book, there's like two or three mysterious deaths every chapter in my book. And there was a tremendous amount of fear. People did not want to come forward, especially the FBI. And I really demonstrate this. I've got FBI memorandums. I've got affidavits. I've got all kinds of documentation about the FBI. The FBI went into a full-court press to really go after these victims. Now, these kids, the youngest kid I talked to who was flown around and molested and given drugs was 11 years old. That was the youngest one I talked to. But I know that there were kids that were younger because all the victims said that there were younger kids. And
what age group?
Well, actually, one of the girls who wouldn't grant me an interview, but I've got her social services documentation, she was getting exploited at the age of 9 or 10. And then the youngest one I talked to was exploited at 11. But I've heard of kids that were like 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when you get these kids from very lower socioeconomic dysfunctional families, and they're repeatedly molested, they're turned on to drugs. Drugs were a big carrot for these kids. If the kids did what the pedophiles wanted, they would be given drugs and money too, but heavily on drugs. So ultimately, these kids turned out to be in very bad shape, very low self-esteem. So when the FBI came in and started getting heavy with these kids, most of them just recanted. I mean, they did not want to go up against the FBI. The FBI came in and got really, really heavy with the victims.
They recanted, but afterward, some of the victims turned around on that as well.
Yes, some of the victims did turn around. Some recanted and turned around. And there was a girl who refused to recant her abuse. Her name was Alicia Owen. And as I said earlier, there were two corrupt grand juries, a state grand jury and a federal grand jury, that were very corrupt. And your readers might think that grand juries, just the sound of like grand jury has like the ring of authenticity and the impromptu of something that's very legitimate. But a grand jury is very easy to corrupt and very easy to hijack because you get the grand jury, a special prosecutor is hired. And that special prosecutor and grand jurors are just regular citizens that show up for jury duty and they're funneled to a grand jury. So these grand jurors are just regular citizens. They're funneled to a grand jury. And then you've got a special prosecutor and he decides what evidence is shown to the grand jurors. So a special prosecutor can get an indictment or not get an indictment. I mean, can indict an innocent person or not? And, you know, a grand juror, a special prosecutor has so much power over a grand jury that a New York justice once quipped that special prosecutors of grand juries have so much power that they could get grand jurors to indict a ham sandwich. And in the Franklin scandal, there were definitely some ham sandwiches indicted.
We're getting into the legal detail, and I'm glad you explained that legally. But getting back to the investigation by Gary Caradore, a fantastic investigator, tell his story to the listeners.
Well, Gary Caradore ran a very large detective agency. He was a state investigator for the Nebraska State Patrol, which is basically the Nebraska State Police. And he retired from that, and he founded an investigative agency, which numbered over 100 employees. And he was a great investigator. I mean, there were very few people in the country that had his skills. I mean, his specialty, the thing that he really loved to do, was to find runaways that had become enmeshed in, like, prostitution. And he would dress up as a priest or a plumber or whatever it took to retrieve victims. And So he was like the perfect guy to tap for this type of investigation.
Do you think that really that was very unsettling for the FBI who were involved in this cover-up?
Well, the FBI harassed Gary Caradore unbelievably, and they also tapped his phones.
Tapped, and they followed him around.
And his house was broken into, and his vehicles were tampered with. But Gary Caradore really believed that children in the United States shouldn't be abused with impunity. I mean, he really believed that. He was a very solid, moral, ethical individual. And he believed that children in the United States shouldn't be abused with impunity. So despite the FBI harassment, despite the Department of Justice harassment, he kept finding victims and videotaping them. And ultimately, he achieved a critical mass of evidence. But he was still the hunted. I mean, the FBI was still coming after him. The Department of Justice was still coming after him.
To mess with the witnesses and victims, and to slow him down and stop him ultimately from finding some of the crown jewels in the evidence, which are those photos of the victims at the parties, right?
Yes. Most of the victims that were interviewed said that they had been photographed, that this was not only a child prostitution network, but it was also a child pornography network. And the victims that had come forward, and then the victims that didn't come forward, who I have subsequently talked to, a number of them talked about being photographed. And Gary Caradore ultimately realized that because these grand juries were so corrupt, because the FBI in Omaha was so corrupt, and because the Department of Justice in Omaha was so corrupt, that he was going to have to find irrefutable evidence to really nail this story, to really bring it home. And in Chicago, I've got five corroborations in my book that in Chicago he did come by pictures of this pedophile network, pictures taken at this party. And he was flying his plane back to Nebraska, and it mysteriously broke up over Lee County, Illinois, and he was killed and his son was killed. And those are two of the mysterious deaths in the book. But there are other very mysterious and macabre deaths in the book, too.
The photos, the briefcase?
The briefcase and the photos were never recovered. And the evidence was really combed through. And it's the National Transportation Safety Board said pilot error caused Gary Caradore's plane to disintegrate in the middle of the air. The whole investigation of Gary Caradore's death is very suspect. And in the book, I show a number of things that don't make sense about that investigation.
You know, we were talking earlier about many concepts that and ideas that this book brings out. And, of course, I mentioned that it's written very cinematically. And I said, hey, you know, a movie could be made out of this book because it's written so well. And you said, you know, a lot of movies can be written from the material in this book. There's so many different, and the investigative work of Gary Caradore is one of them, and you mentioned some others as well. But the other topic that comes up too is how can people be quiet about this? And I know you've thought about that in depth.
Well, the thing about it is, the reason why in the Franklin scandal, there was a Washington, D.C. element. There's a chapter dedicated to Washington, D.C. And a number of these kids were flown to Washington, D.C. I've got well over 200 of the Ring's flight receipts, and most of them go to Washington, D.C. That was some of the cash that I scored from the grand jury. And in Washington, D.C., there was a house wired for audiovisual blackmail. And a lot of these parties went down in that house. And the kids and the power brokers and the drugs would all commingle in this house. It was in a very upscale part of Washington, D.C. And if you molested a child or had any kind of illicit sex or took any illicit drugs, you were subject to blackmail at that point. And a number of our politicians are blackmailed. I believe that after researching this book for 7 years and being in this very strange world for 9 years, I am Sure. And that's one of the main reasons why this network had to be covered up the way it was covered up, at all expense. It's the reason why people had to die. It's the reason why grand juries had to be corrupted. It's the reason why the FBI had to get heavy with witnesses, both victims and perpetrators, to cover this up. Because if Americans realized that the checks and balances in their political system was in fact blackmail rather than the Electoral College, there would be tremendous outrage, especially blackmail involving children. I mean, that would really just provoke a tremendous amount of outrage, like what happened in Belgium, where you would have tens of thousands of people hitting the streets in protest.
Blackmail is an intrinsic part of the child sex trafficking business, among other types of businesses, too. We're speaking with Nick Bryant. He's an investigative journalist and author of The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal. We're coming to the bottom of the hour. We're going to open up the phone lines. If you have a question or a comment for Nick Bryant or any topic of this show, call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. You're listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Nick Bryant, the author of The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal. And we're going to go to the phones to answer your calls and questions and comments.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jeff. How are you? Thanks, how are you? Yeah, I called in last time your guest was on. This is, like, really upsetting to me. Well, I think you just found Michael Moore's new movie. You should be contacted maybe and encouraged to maybe be one of the people who try to expose the movie.
Actually, I've contacted Michael Moore, and he has shown very little interest in this subject matter.
It's a tough
unfortunately
one. Well, I'd like to get involved with this if there is a way that people can get involved, for sure. That's one thing I'd like to say. I would imagine, and I'm just guessing, some of those children probably get murdered.
Yes, there were reports of that, for sure. In my book, I talk about that.
Well, Jeff, I've been listening to this radio station since 1984. This is one of the top stories that I've ever heard.
Me as well, Antonio, and I. It just it makes me think about if people really knew what was going on, they would be pouring into the streets like they did in Belgium here in this country and restructuring the political system. And that's essentially what Nick Bryant mentions as well. Is there a way to reach you, Nick?
You can go to the book's website, www.franklinscandal.com, and you can click on a little button that says Contact Author, and I respond to emails.
I will do that. I'm going to request on air that other producers on the station cover this story throughout the day and constantly. Yeah. This needs to be really exposed.
Well, I've been trying to get Amy Goodman to cover this story, and unfortunately, Amy Goodman has been completely unreceptive to covering this story. So I would appeal to WBAI listeners that they contact Amy Goodman and at least have her take a look at my book and let her decide.
If Ms. Goodman doesn't want to cover it, there's other producers, and throughout the day, she's not the only thing in town.
That's
true.
And
I like her show. I'm just saying. This is serious stuff. This has got to be stopped immediately. And when this is stopped, I think we're all the better for it. Just on 60 Minutes, was it this past Sunday, they talked about the corruption, all the senators and congressmen accepting insider
stock trades?
About trade.
Yes, yeah. I saw that. That's powerful. Yeah.
Well, I'll listen to the rest of the show. God bless you both. And I'm shaking a little bit, and I had to stop eating, and I'd like to get involved, so I will do that.
Thanks for your comments, Antonio.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, Jeff. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, this is Ed from Jamaica. Good evening, Mr. Bryant. I listened to you the last time you were on in other news. I had some difficulty trying to obtain your book. That website, that's where you can get it now?
You can get it at through the Barnes & Noble website. You can get it through Amazon. You can get it through my website. That shouldn't be a problem. Although I will say this, the hardcover edition has been sold out, and it's about to go to paperback, but you can definitely get a hardcover copy
at
this point.
Well, I remember the last time I was trying to get it, for some reason it was very difficult to get. I even went to some bookstores, and some people weren't even familiar with it. But I guess that could be part of the cover-up, because it seems like this thing is so massive. Do you name names in the book, specific politicians and or specific businessmen that have direct involvement with this?
There are some names that are named. A lot of times, and here was the problem that I had with naming some of the very prominent politicians, is the system is set up very efficiently. And the kids are, as I said earlier, they're from lower socioeconomic dysfunctional families. They're repeatedly molested, they're turned onto drugs, and then they're expunged when they lose their youthful marketability. So then they go on to become drug addicts and felons and thereby compromise their own credibility. So it's really difficult. If a victim, who I believe was a victim, says to me, Senator X molested me, okay, so you've got this august senator who seems to be a perfect family man, and then you've got this felon who said that he was molested by Senator X. I mean, it's a first-round TKO as far as credibility. So it's very difficult on a number of occasions to name some of the politicians and prominent businessmen and people in the media that I know were molested.
Just to play devil's advocate for a minute, how can you ascertain, what is your standard of proof?
My standard of proof is, you would have to read the book, mm-hmm. but the magnitude of the cover-up. Okay, we're talking a cover-up that spanned from Nebraska to Washington, D.C. We're talking a cover-up, and I know that this sounds very implausible to a lot of the listeners, but if you read my book, you would see. We're talking about a cover-up that was orchestrated by the Department of Justice, that was carried out by the FBI and also the Secret Service, that included the hijacking of three grand juries. So that's a tremendous amount of power. The people that were pulling the strings on this cover-up had to be at the apex of government to pull off such a massive cover-up. And over the course of the last 9 years, I have gotten to know a lot of these victims. And there are some of these victims that are very damaged, but then there are a number of these victims that have somehow gotten their lives together, which is quite remarkable. But there have been a number of victims that I have never caught lying to me over the course of the 9 years that I've known them.
I'm familiar. I was in the military, and I'm familiar with how the government works as far as covering up and how it can basically befuddle someone or abuse someone so much to where even if they do get their life together, either A, they don't want to be bothered with it as far as talking about it anymore because they're so terrified that they don't want to say anything, or B, they're so messed up that their story can't be believed. I don't have any difficulty believing what you're saying. It's just that to get it out there to the general masses, you've got to have some type of poignant credibility. And a lot of the
I spent 7 years on this investigation. A lot of that book is proved with sealed grand jury documentation and testimony that came from the FBI, that came from the Department of Justice, that came from the Nebraska State Patrol, that came from social services. I have an overkill of corroboration. You can go to Amazon right now and click on Franklin Scandal, and you can buy it.
Well, I'm definitely going to do that. I tried to get it the last time.
You shouldn't have had a problem, but you can go to Amazon or actually to my website or to Barnes & Noble's website, and you can buy the Franklin Scandal. Shouldn't be a problem.
Just one more question, not to get too far off the topic, but was there any connections to the occult as far as I know with some child sex rings in some parts of the government, there's connections to the Templars or some darker of the Masonic forces. Well, did you find any connections to that as far as occult or paganism or anything like that involving this also?
There was some anecdotes of the occult that came up and by some of the victims, but I suggest that you read the book and you decide for yourself whether or not they're telling the truth.
Thanks.
Good questions, Ed. Thanks very much.
Hi, is it my turn?
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, gee, I'm shocked at his naive take. I worked on a grand jury, and let me tell you, a sandwich absolutely can be indicted. I should think Assange wouldn't feel so bad knowing how corrupt. If that gentleman that was talking before me knew what the hell they're doing to Assange and Bradley, I mean, my God. What makes him think these people that never earned a dollar correctly in their life are not going to manipulate the lower classes?
I understand the point, caller, and I think he was referring to more photographic and evidence,
no,
things
you
like
don't
that.
Need that.
I understand,
Anybody
but
knows
I'm
that grand jury.
Right, caller.
Caller,
just to relax you for a minute. I think that's where he was going. Okay, in wanting the evidence and proof. But go ahead.
People could doubt that children are abused horrifically. It's in every country. It isn't just here. But they do it differently in different countries.
Okay, do you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I do. I was very interested in your trail story, the first one. And I can't wait to contact my cousin because he's been an airplane mechanic and he knows a lot about how pilots and what goes on between, messing with the atmosphere. And I was very interested in what you were saying about strontium and the aluminum and where we're really getting all these metals from, because there was a lady on the station, another radio station, saying that we don't really have all these chemicals in us, and I think she was improbable. I think we need to find out how that, I think both your segments are important. But especially when you said less aluminum and then more strontium, I just think people, that's the thing we really need to know about, because the other people are afraid of going to the darkness of the corruptness of politicians. And as far as I'm concerned, they're ridiculously corrupt. So I don't doubt, the other parts of your story. And I compliment your author. And also Amy's backers won't let her cover certain stories. So if she doesn't take the story, it isn't just that she's not interested. It's she may not be, it may not be a story she can cover, but she might eventually cover your book, possibly.
I think she might as well.
But I think your program, I can't tell you. I can't wait till it comes on because you have two dynamite stories today.
Caller, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Okay. I wanted to ask, there's another person on this very radio station named Mike Levine. There's a program called the Expert Witness Show.
Yes.
And this goes back a ways, I'm guessing it might be 15 years ago. He had a couple women on who had written a book called Thanks for the Memories, where they accused, and Mike Levine, who does the Expert Witness Show, and this was on that program, said he can't verify this, but it seemed worthy of him of investigating, or at least giving attention to, and the reason it's called Thanks for the Memories is these women, so when they were younger...
I'm familiar with the book that you're talking about.
It
was,
it was
written by Sue Ford.
Your thoughts about that book involving Bob Hope and I think Art Linkletter.
It was one person making allegations. My book is very different. My book has a number of witnesses and victims that came forward. And it also has, I've got so much documentation in the book that it's mind-boggling. Actually, some of the documents that I have from the grand jury and other types of documents are just so mind-boggling that we just put them in the back of the book. We've got like about 100 pages of my documentation in the back of the book just to show that these things are proven and that I just didn't conjure these facts up out of the ether. So my book is very different than that book. In that book, you have one person making allegations. In my book, you've got several people making allegations, but not only victims, but other people that were involved in this network too, and certain people within social services. So and a lot of and plus I have a lot of law enforcement documentation on this matter. So it's kind of comparing apples to oranges.
Okay, so as far as the other book I mentioned, you would say that personally, you cannot necessarily give any credence to that other book.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's one person's allegations, and my book is very different because I have witness upon witness upon witness and documentation. I've got a lot more evidence than just one person making allegations. So it's like I said, I'm not saying what is in that book is incorrect or false. I'm just saying that it's comparing apples and oranges.
Okay, well, thanks, and I'm glad you're pursuing this vile and important to stop situation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The show he mentioned is Expert Witness, which is, when is that on?
Tomorrow at midnight.
Tomorrow at midnight. Fantastic show as well. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Nick. You know, I just I wanted to say that I feel like I know I am extremely open-minded, but this is just so hard for me. And it's not that I don't believe you. I mean, it's really not that. It's just that I guess it's because I don't want to believe it. I just recently read a book by David Icke, I think is how you pronounce it. And it's one of his older books. It was called I Am Me, I Am Free, The Robot's Guide to Freedom. And I totally loved the book. It was amazing, and I believed it all. And right in the middle, he's got this chapter about basically what you're talking about. But he names names. It was this Kathy O'Brien, who apparently went on to write another book herself. She and her daughter were apparently victims. And it was like he used, you know, Clinton and Bush. You know, he named their names. And I literally had to rip those pages out of the book because I just felt like the whole book made perfect sense to me. It worked for me, but I couldn't go there with that. It just didn't. So, again,
well, that's one of the problems with this. The subject matter is so horrific that people don't want to take a look at it,
yes.
A good hard look at it. But,
yes. But
then again, my book proves that scores of children were abused with impunity, and that authorities knew about these children getting abused. And the Jeffrey Epstein case that I cited earlier in the interview, which has transpired in the last 5 years, and I know of other networks that have also operated in the United States of America. And I talk about another network in my book that I have very good documentation on. So it's up to America. Does America want to let its children be abused with impunity or not? I mean, this is a question that Americans have to grapple with. Should American children be abused with impunity in America, or should they not? I know it's a horrific subject matter, but it's something that Americans have to face, or else it's going to continue unabated.
I totally agree with you. It's like when I first heard about, you know, the doubts about how what happened to the World Trade Centers. You know, when I first heard that, it was like I couldn't even, you know, accept that there was possibly a different explanation. But, you know, of course, I started listening, and now I believe very differently. So, you know, basically, I guess I want to end my comment by saying thank you, because I'm going to tear up. It's so horrible. But it does need to be exposed. It really does. And, you know, I guess the thing with the David Icke book was that it was really my first exposure to it. And so I think you're presenting it in a whole different way. And I just thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, caller. David Icke, also people say David Icke as well. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
All right. I was wondering, right, is it a way maybe that flyers could be passed out, like, anonymously, you know, asking the public, would they like something like that to happen to their children? You know what I mean? Maybe something that would shock them.
Well, the problem is that people don't think it's going to happen to their children.
Right.
That's the problem.
That's right.
And in my book, I talk about there's a victim named Alicia Owen who came from a very religious family, and she rebelled at a relatively young age. And a lot of kids from very religious families rebel.
Right.
Alicia was too naive to be able to distinguish the wrong crowd from an evil horde.
True.
And she fell in with this network. And actually, I mentioned her in passing briefly. She was the kid that refused to recant her abuse. A state grand jury indicted her on 8 counts of perjury, and a federal grand jury indicted her on 8 counts of perjury. She was looking at 300 years in prison because she refused to recant her abuse. And she ultimately was sentenced to between 9 and 15 years. And at this point, she was 21 years old. She was indicted when she was 21 years old, and she had been molested since she was 14. And she was sentenced between 9 and 15 years in prison for perjury, a kid, 21-year-old kid, and she spent 2 years in solitary. And her brother
and he had no fault.
She was, you can read my book. I get into the state grand jury that indicted her on the 8 counts of perjury, and then I show what a kangaroo court her trial was. I mean, her trial is the biggest section of the book, because both the state and the federal grand jury in Nebraska had said that there was no abuse and indicted Alicia Owen. So for these grand juries to be sanctified, they had to go after Alicia Owen, and they had to get her. They had to find her guilty. And actually, CBS lent a helping hand in crucifying Alicia's character, CBS. So it's the amount of power not only amongst the government, but within the media that went into vaporizing this is kind of mind-boggling.
It goes to show you how far the black hand goes, huh?
The black hand goes very, very, very far.
Pitiful, man.
It's very sad. It's a very sad commentary.
You know, but I really appreciate your courage, you know, and I look forward to reading that book myself.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you. I'm not going to hold up the line because I know other people want to get through.
Thank you very much, caller. It's a really good read, by the way. Hi, you're on the air?
This is actually somebody who's corresponded with Nick. It's Brian from Philadelphia. How are you, Nick?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and I just want to say to everybody out there, this is an excellent piece of journalism if you haven't read it. It's a definitive work on the subject, in my view, and I would encourage everybody to read it. I wanted to ask Nick a couple of quick questions. If I could also just throw in before, two other books on this and related subjects worth reading, Memory, Trauma, Treatment, and the Law, if you're interested from a legal perspective on these issues, and Dialogues with Forgotten Voices by Schwartz, which tackles psychological issues, and both excellent compliments to Nick's journalism. Nick, a couple of things. First, the story of Henry Vincent has always been fascinating to me. And I wonder if you would speak to the sealing of court documents and what you think that has to do with, if anything, the keeping, you know, the controlling of this story. It's something that's not all that uncommon, of course, in lots of cases, but what do you think in this case, to the role that's been played by the sealing of documents?
Well, the documentation in Nebraska was sealed, and I had the good fortune of getting it. I tried to get the sealed documentation in Washington, D.C., where this was also covered up, but I was unable to get it. I've been told that there were like 25,000 documents that were sealed on the Washington, D.C. side of this, and I made an assiduous effort to acquire that documentation, but I was unable to, unfortunately.
Is there any... You know more about it, Nick. I mean, I wish I did know, but is there a time limit on it? Is it something that after a certain period of time has to be released, or is that not the case?
My understanding that these documents were sealed in perpetuity. So it's basically, I'm trying to expedite the process. I'm actually taking another shot at those documents again, but whether I'm going to have any success, only time will tell.
Just one last thing. Again, Nick, thanks for your work. There was a report shortly after the Sandusky story broke, and I apologize if this has been covered. I tuned in late. There was a report shortly after made by, I think, a Pittsburgh radio host that his claim was that there were two Pennsylvania journalists looking into the possibility that children from the Second Mile had been pandered in a situation that sounded like it could be similar to Franklin. I heard nothing about those allegations after that day. Nothing. They were repeated several places. Never heard a follow-up report. You heard anything about that, either to discredit them or to lend credence to them?
I looked very hard at those allegations, and actually I had a pretty good connection there, but I was not able to really corroborate that there was a network there. And the person who I talked to who had been in the judiciary was not able to corroborate it. So at this point, those allegations are uncorroborated.
Caller, thank you very much for those questions and insight. Really appreciate that. Our guest, Nick Bryant, the investigative journalist and author of the book, The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Glad to be here.
That'll do it for us. Excuse me. On In Other News, thank you, caller. If you're on the line, send us an email at inothernewsradio@yahoo.com, and I'll forward those to Nick. I'll see you next week, 10 p.m.
Hey everybody, this is Stu Cutler. I listen to WBAI 99.5.